Radio City Talk.
The A to Z of Merseyside football.
Okay, it's the A to Z of Merseyside football. It's a historic day for myself and John Keith because we finally reached the end of the letter G. We're not even halfway through the alphabet. We've been doing this for over a year now, but the letter G it is. So be prepared for some excellent final names to be thrown in the pot. Morning, John.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, it is. To get to the end of the G's, I thought it would never come. Now, if I mention the word Guinness, you would think of a drink, a black drink, and you say, what on earth has that got to do with the A to Z of Mersey soccer? Well, the world-famous black brew played a pivotal role in the founding of Anfield's fabled boot room. That stuffy, windowless space from which your brain's trust of football, wisdom and experience helped to plot so many conquests in England and Europe. Guinness Exports FC was formed in 1948, originally playing in the fifth division of the Liverpool Shipping League, later playing in the Lancashire Combination and Cheshire League. Now, their manager in the late 1950s and early 1960s was one Paul Orr, later Lord Mayor of Liverpool. Not only did his players receive treatment at Anfield from Bob Paisley and Joe Fagan, but on occasions they also borrowed sets of kit from Liverpool. One day, Joe Fagan spotted a big delivery lorry pulling into the Anfield car park. On board were many, many crates of Guinness, and the driver asked Joe where he wanted them unloaded. Joe was a bit puzzled by this and said, what are they doing here? He said, oh, Mr. Orr sent these. So Joe told him to take all these crates, one after another, down the corridor and better leave them in the boot room, which then, as the title suggests, was used solely as a stock room for boots.
So they didn't hang out in the boot room at that stage?
No, it was just where they put the boots. But, of course, once this cascade of Guinness arrived, they started to go in there to talk and to chat. And so this decision by Joe to put the Guinness crates in there was groundbreaking for English football. From then on, no longer just a boot store, but the meeting point for the coaching staff. Contrary to urban myth, they were rarely joined by Bill Shankly because he respected it as their space, not his. The backroom men would discuss players, matches, tactics and all things football over a drink, which extended beyond Guinness to Scotch and brown ale, but not the pink gin that Watford chairman Elton John asked for when he was invited into the legendary Buto when Watford came down during the 1980s.
He asked for a pink gin, didn't he?
He asked for a pink gin, and Joe Fagan said, you can't have one of those, lad. You can have a brown ale, a Scotch or a Guinness.
Did they get deliveries of brown ale as well?
Well, in the end, they got their own, yes. Brilliant. Yeah, they got their own. So that was it. But it really was a pivotal moment, thanks to Paul Orr and Guinness. Now, one of Tranmere's highly defendable defenders, Steve, during their rise through the divisions in the 1990s, was centre-back Sean Garnett. He also played for them three times at Wembley, winning a Leyland Daff Cup medal in 1990, when he played a key role in marking Bristol Rovers star attacker Devon White. He also appeared in two Division 3 playoff finals in a total of 146 appearances, which brought him 6 goals. Born in Wallasey in 1969, 6'2" Garnett joined Tranmere from school as a YTS apprentice in 1986. He was with them for a decade, leaving to join Swansea for £200,000. He stayed with the Welsh club for only 6 months, followed by 6 years at Oldham and spells at Halifax, Morecambe and Harrogate Town, where he was player coach, before returning to his first football home, Tranmere, in 2006 as youth coach. And no doubt, like everybody else at Tranmere, thrilled by their return to the Football League after a three-year absence, and well done to them. Now, turning the clock back to the 1930s...
I just want to say about Sean, he's Tranmere through and through, and he's one of the greats of the football club. I mean, there's a lot of those former players like Chrissy Malkin and Eric Nixon and... they live and breathe and bleed Tranmere Rovers. And well, Garnett is very much that.
Absolutely. He's part of the fabric of Prenton Park, Steve, isn't he? Yeah. Now, turning the clock back to the 1930s, Charlie G was a noted Everton England centre-half. He played in a formidable half-back line with Cliff Britton and Jock Thompson. Signed from his local club Stockport County in the summer of 1930 following Everton's relegation, he made the number 5 jersey his own halfway through the following season and was an ever-present from New Year's Day to the end of the campaign as the club bounced straight back up to the top flight as second division champions. G did even even better the following season, playing in 38 of Everton's 42 games en route to the league title, which they won with 56 points, two ahead of Arsenal. Just listen to this, Steve. It was a season notable for an Everton goal spree in seven consecutive home matches beginning in mid-October. The results reading 9-3, 8-1, 7-2, 9-2, 5-1, 5-0 and 4-2.
Wow.
Dixie Dean scored 21 goals in those seven games alone, finishing with 46 for the season, while Everton totaled 116 from their 42 league games, which adds some perspective to the acclaim for Manchester City, setting a new Premier League record of over 100 from 38 games in the season just finished. G went on to make 212 Everton appearances, scoring twice, and retired injured after a wartime game against Fulham in May 1940. Now, earlier in this series, Steve, we related the story of how Liverpool City engineer John Brodie left the legacy of his brainchild, his invention of goal nets.
Yeah,
but another City engineer also left an enduring link to Merseyside football, his own surname. George William Goodison was born in Leeds in 1846. He became articled as a 15-year-old to Merseyside civil engineer Alfred Taylor and was eventually appointed consultant engineer to the local boards of Walton-on-the-Hill and Much Woolton, who were then outside the actual city of Liverpool. But it was in this role that Goodison, planning an innovative sewerage system, surveyed the land around what would become Everton FC's new home at Mere Green Field, following their departure from Anfield after the famous rent dispute. His project was so successful that Goodison Road was named after him, and when Everton arrived, their board decided their new stadium should also carry his name, and so Goodison Park was born. George and his wife Anne moved to Gloucestershire, where he died in 1913, but by then his namesake, Goodison Park, had become one of the great theatres of football. To end the G section, we must record the fact that two famous players, whose talents shone away from Merseyside, did both wear Everton's royal blue, Paul Gascoigne and David Ginola, whose periods at Goodison overlapped for a month in 2002. The career of gifted midfielder Gascoigne, arguably the greatest English player of his generation, but a troubled soul, was in its dying embers when Walter Smith signed him for Everton on a free from Middlesbrough in July 2000. After his spells with his hometown club Newcastle, Tottenham, Lazio and Glasgow Rangers. Gascoigne's stay lasted less than 2 years, spanning 38 appearances and a single goal before he left for Burnley on a free in March 2002. And a month before Gascoigne's departure, France winger David Désiré Marc Ginola checked into Goodison on a free from Aston Villa shortly before Walter Smith's sacking and the arrival of David Moyes as manager. Ginola had starred for Paris Saint-Germain, Newcastle and Tottenham prior to joining Villa, but his Everton career was restricted to seven appearances. His last and the only one under Moyes was as a substitute in the final game of the 2001-02 season, a 4-3 defeat at Arsenal, after which he retired.
Gee, we've had some brilliant G's. Ginola and Gascoigne finishing it off. I'm absolutely fascinated with the Goodison one because I just wonder how many Evertonians actually know where the name Goodison Park came from.
Well, I hope we've opened
a few. It's an engineer. An engineer.
So yeah. There's two engineers given played pivotal roles in Merseyside's football history.
Fantastic. Have you enjoyed the G's, John?
Oh, I have indeed. I hope the ensuing letters are as enjoyable. Although
great
I have
stuff.
To say, when we pick this up again later in the summer, we have got to talk about two of the darkest days in Merseyside football, and of course Hillsborough and Heysel, part of the H's, but we'll have some lighter ones as well.
Brilliant stuff. John Keith with the A to Z of Merseyside football, always fascinating. This is Radio City Talk.
The kickoff. Rock, sport and talk. Radio City Talk.